Welcome into the Whole Hog Podcast. Seth Campbell, Scotty Bordelon, as always, and now we get the pleasure of having Matt Jones with us as well.
He's the football guy.
The old football guy. Pittman.
Yeah. Hey, yes. I think that's a compliment. If you get Sam
Pittman. I would have definitely taken it as a compliment. Absolutely.
If you get Sam Pittman to call you an old football guy, Matt, I mean, that's pretty high praise.
I'm not sure I'm old or a football guy, to be honest with you, but I'll take it.
Hey, that means that you asked a really good question.
Yeah, I mean, you were paying attention to what he said probably when he was here as an O-line coach.
For people who don't understand what we're talking about, it was on a Zoom call the other night. And, I covered Pittman whenever he was here the first time from 2013 to 15. And one of the things I remember him talking about all the time was that you want to have your starting five offensive line in place about 2 to 2.5 weeks before the first game. And so the question basically was, hey, you've got a scrimmage coming up this weekend. When the scrimmage is over, you're going to be within 3 weeks of playing Georgia. How big is this scrimmage to, setting your starting five and moving forward with it? And I thought he gave a great answer. He said, probably after this weekend scrimmage, they're going to have four starters that they have identified that they're going to move along with. He said, there may be that one spot. My guess is with what we've seen from them this preseason, it's going to be left guard. But that one spot that you're still kind of tweaking, and then you maybe try to have that starter in place by about 2 weeks beforehand, and then you start trying to figure out who your number six, your number seven, your number eight linemen are. And I don't know that it'll ever really be set in that second team. I think there's always kind of a revolving door going on there. But I think after this weekend, you're going to really have a good feel for who the starting five are. And I think for any team, you got to have a good offensive line. I think the best football teams are built from the inside out. And, if you don't have a good offensive line, it's just a house of cards, really, is all it is. You can have the best receivers and the best running backs and quarterbacks. But if you don't have a good offensive line, your offense isn't going to work. And so, I'm really interested to see what they're going to look like on the starting five after this weekend.
Yeah, well, so coming up on the podcast, we will have some more football talk. Offensive line, we're going to talk a little bit about Arkansas's first scrimmage and then their second scrimmage coming up on, well, I guess that would be today, the day that this podcast comes out. And then we also got, let's look at, Matt talked a little bit about the scrimmage and game shape. He wrote a story about that, which will be in the description. The link will be in the description. We'll talk more about that. But yeah, guys, let's just start off with what we saw last week. I mean, we didn't see what we heard.
Scotty is our eyes.
From the coaches about last week's scrimmage. And I guess it's all kind of starts. Let's start with Felipe Franks at the quarterback position. What did you understand from what the coaches were saying about Felipe, Scotty?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that I think one of the first questions that Sam Pittman was asked last Friday was, how did Felipe Franks look? Like that was the question a lot of people had in mind, because it's his job to lose, and you want to see, like, I can go to practice and say that Felipe Franks looked really good throwing to his guys on air. Like, there's no defense to account for, no pass rush, none of that. So you wanted to see if his poise and that confidence kind of carried over into a, like, more of a game-like situation. And it seems like it did. Like, Sam Pittman said he had his most accurate day of camp. I think he threw four touchdowns. So he threw one to Mike Woods, Treylon Burks, which, I mean, just right off the bat, if any fan just loved to hear that. Like, you're getting the ball into the hands of two of your top playmakers at the skill position. And you throw in Trey Knox, too. I've heard I asked about him this week. He's apparently making some plays, and they're working on him to, just become a little bit more explosive. But also tight end was a little bit of a question too. Like, they're super thin and super in terms of like bodies and experience. Like, the experience is just not really there. Like, you've got a guy in Blake Kern who's been here, seems like for forever, but we've talked about it before. He doesn't have a catch to his name. Hudson Henry goes out and catches two balls for scores from Felipe Franks too. And Sam Pittman said he made a guy miss right around the goal line. So I think that was a plus. And, maybe if there was one downside or one negative, maybe it was maybe the game shape, which Matt will probably talk about. But Sam Pittman said that they put the ball on the ground just, probably too many times for his liking. So you just got to shore up ball security. But those were probably my main takeaways.
That's not necessarily abnormal, A, to be out of shape in the first scrimmage, especially, you know, some people may say that not having a spring practice didn't factor into that. And it may not have, but just your first scrimmage, you're not going to be in the best shape that you could possibly be in. And I think that's just the way that the football world works. And so it's good that they have addressed it. And now moving forward, I'd like to see what he says about it in the second scrimmage. Anything else from press conferences or anything that stood out to you, Matt?
Well, going to the game shape part, you know, I don't think you're going to find any head coach right now who likes the type of shape that their team is in. And I think that, you know, that's partly just kind of coach speak. I think that there's some reality that's built into that. I mean, you even think about how poor isn't really the right word, but even think about how, you know, much a team grows, say, like in the first 2 or 3 weeks of the season, how much different they look, say, from like game one to game three. And then you backtrack from that, you know, you're here 3-4 weeks before the season starts. There's a natural, you know, physical shape that you begin to get into. And, you know, I think about you could be in the best shape in the world and you go try some sort of new activity, whether it be cycling or hiking or, you know, whatever it is. And there's going to be new muscles that you're having to develop. And so I think that, you know, you're kind of seeing that right now. These guys are, from a physical standpoint, they're in really good condition. Every football team is. This is as good of a physical condition they're going to be in probably all year. But now it's taking that next step, putting on the pads, you know, hitting each other. You know, it's just it's different, and it's something that there's an acclimation, you know, process. And I thought it was interesting though that Sam Pittman said, even you take it a step further, even in addition to the physical state, your game shape is determined by your mental state and being able to flush a bad play. If you're a cornerback and you give up a 50-yard pass, can you get back up and, you know, make the type of play that you're supposed to the next time? Or if you're a receiver and you drop a pass, if you're a quarterback and you miss it, there's a number of things that go into that. And so I thought it was interesting to hear him talk about how it's not just physical that goes into determining what kind of shape he thinks his team is in right now. There's a mental side of that. And it sounded, just kind of reading between the lines, that he didn't like the mental state, I think especially of his defense in the scrimmage. It sounded like they may have given up some big plays and started to fold because of it. And that's something we've seen from Arkansas for years now. You know, defense gives up a big play and it seems like it's affecting them later on in the game, or at least certain players. And so I think that's where he was going with the game shape comment. And I thought it was, you know, a really insightful comment. And, you know, it just kind of shows you all of the different elements that these coaches are assessing and evaluating right now. I think that, you know, it really goes to show you just how complex it is to be a football coach, and then especially one, you know, in a big time conference like Arkansas is playing in.
Guys, as we go through and look at the limited footage that we get, the limited time that we get at the practices, I just want to ask, who is somebody that maybe has stood out to you as a surprise in this fall camp? We'll start with you, Scotty.
That's a good question. You know, Julius Coates, we've talked about him a lot in past podcasts. He just, you just keep hearing his name come up. And after the scrimmage last Friday, Sam Pittman just kind of like briefly touched on him. He said, man, we can hardly block the guy. I mean, he's 6'7" and he's got a really great frame. And Bob wrote a Hog Futures story on Julius Coates earlier this week, and he talked to East Mississippi Community College defensive coordinator, and he said if Julius Coates does everything that he's supposed to, he can be, like, he's got the potential to be a high round draft pick in the NFL. So he's a name that we've heard a lot. I think Xavier Kelly's power is standing out on the defensive line. You know, I think those two guys, and then Dorian Gerald, you know, coming back from an injury, I think he's kind of found that quick twitch, quickness, like he's got that on the end. You know, in terms of like on the offensive side of the ball, I think the coaches really like what they've seen from Traylon Smith too. Because Rakeem Boyd's not going to be, as much as he wants to be, an every down back. Like, this league is just so physical, and now you're playing 10 SEC games as opposed to 8. Like, he's not going to be able to, as good as Rakeem Boyd is and as tough as he may be, he's not going to be able to withstand that beating all year long and being every down back. So you got to have a great complement to him. And I think Traylon Smith, by all accounts, is going to be that guy. You know, maybe after Traylon Smith, it becomes a little bit shaky, but you probably feel pretty good about your 1-2. Sam Pittman's been really high on Traylon Smith since he got here. And just from everything we've heard, everybody has complimented how hard he works, how tough he is. And that's, you like to hear that. I mean, the guy's 5'9", like 180 pounds, but he's tough as nails. So you got to have a guy like that as a number two. You know, maybe at receiver, I think Mike Woods is probably having the best camp of his college career. It's good to hear that Traylon Burks is getting the ball in his hands and he's finding the end zone. And then I think on the offensive line, Myron Cunningham's been, he's just been steady. And then Bo Limmer, I wrote about him yesterday or the day before, and he seems like he's established himself as the leader at that right guard spot. Kendall Briles just loves him. Like he said, Jonathan Marshall said earlier in the week that there's another guy. There was only about one guy on the team who's kind of giving him a run for his money in the weight room, and it's Bo Limmer. And Bo Limmer's just a redshirt freshman, and so he's got a little bit of a nasty streak to him. Kendall Brown said he'll finish you. I mean, you love to hear that when it comes to an offensive lineman. So I know I rambled, but those are just some of the names that have kind of stood out to me.
You're going
to
go through the entire roster there,
yeah,
Scotty?
Yeah, we can run down the roster again like we did about a month ago.
So Myron Cunningham told me in the summer that this was coming from Bo Limmer. I interviewed him for a feature we did for our Hogs Illustrated football preview, and I asked him, I said, you know, I know you didn't play spring football, I said, but, you know, maybe just from the things you're seeing, whether it be, you know, in the meetings you're having or the classrooms or the weight room, who are some players that are standing out to you? And he gave me two. He said Shane Clinton and he said Bo Limmer. Now Clinton hasn't really established himself as a front runner the way that Limmer has, but it seems like everybody who has ever watched Bo Limmer play, and I remember even going back to talking to his high school coach, who was Jeff Traylor's brother, mm-hmm. Down in Tyler, Texas at Lee High School, just so big on him. I remember talking to Dustin Fry on the not talking to him, but hearing him talk on signing day when Bo Limmer signed, and him talking about how this was a guy who was almost like a wrestler on the field. I think how he just played through the whistle and you couldn't get him to stop, almost like a bulldog type player. And so I think that this doesn't really surprise me so much about Bo Limmer. I think if it is a surprise, it's a pleasant surprise that he has established himself so early in this camp.
It's given that I think he only played like 30 snaps last year.
Yeah, I mean, he played in what, three games? Was it
four games? I think
he played 19 snaps against Western Kentucky, mostly in mop-up time at the end of that game, and didn't play very much in the other games that he got into. But, you know, maybe that – and it could be, too, that that's just an indictment of what they have on the offensive line, you know, that a redshirt freshman who hasn't ever really played much is their best player. But I do think that Bo Limmer is going to be a pretty good player before he leaves Arkansas. It kind of reminds me a little bit of a Ricky Stromberg. You can always tell these offensive linemen who are going to be really good, whether it be, Stromberg. I think Stromberg's going to be an all-SEC type lineman.
Yeah, I agree.
Before he's done. Or a Yelda Froholt. You can kind of see it from Froholt. He got pushed around a little bit that first – that off season by McTelvin Ageem, but you could really see him, you know, going back to that mental shape, you know, bouncing back and making some plays. And so, you know, Limmer's been a pleasant surprise. I've been interested to hear what people have said about Dominic Johnson, the running back. You know, I've heard, I think maybe it was Sam Pittman say that he does some things for a running back that you just don't see a lot of freshmen do. And, does that mean he's going to play this year? Does it mean he's going to be a great player this year or even a good one? I don't know, but I think it's interesting to hear the comments about him. And then I've been interested. I don't know if this is a surprise or not. I've just been interested in that it doesn't seem like there are players who have really stood out at linebacker, at tight end.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, I think that's a concern for this team. You got to have a good linebacker in the SEC, and Arkansas lost their best one from last year in Scoot Harris. And I just don't know, you know, did they have that type of linebacker who can step up and be the leader of the group. And, you know, it doesn't have to be an all SEC type performer. It'd be great to have one like that. But, you know, I'm not sure what they've got at linebacker right now. I think that, you know, that's a really big mystery, and maybe even more so than that at tight end. You mentioned Hudson Henry, and I think we all think that he's going to be a pretty good tight end. I think that it's probably a little unfair to him to expect him to be Hunter Henry. And yeah. I think that, you know, there might be some people who think that because of the accolades that he had coming out of high school and, of course, being Hunter's brother and coming out of the same program. I think he'll be a good tight end in time. But I think that, you know, like there is for so many players, there's just a big learning curve for him right now, you know, trying to become that complete tight end. Yeah, he can catch the ball, but, you know, he's still got to work on blocking. You know, he's gained some weight. I think he's about 255, 257 pounds now. He's starting to look more like an SEC tight end, but, you know, there's still that big learning curve. And, you know, so tight end and linebacker are two places that I, you know, maybe you call it a surprise. I'm a little surprised that we haven't seen, you know, more maybe a player stand out more at those positions than we have.
Yeah, I don't think it would be a fall camp if we weren't questioning the depth at linebacker at Arkansas. I mean, like that's an every year thing.
Tradition,
probably
unlike
a lot of
other
teams too that do that. You know, I mean, it kind of, when you look at a roster like Georgia or Alabama or LSU, and you look at, okay, they've got these three starting linebackers, and then they can supplement them with these three other four and five star.
Yeah.
It's kind of embarrassing almost how they seem to gravitate toward the same programs. I don't think that's just an Arkansas problem. I think that, you know, there's a lot of programs in college football that just don't feel like they have the linebacker depth that they should have, or even maybe just one standout linebacker.
Yeah, I feel like the only linebacker that we've heard Sam Pittman or Barry Odom call by name is Deion Edwards, because he, like, either forced or recovered a fumble in the scrimmage. Like, Bumper Poole, like, if Bumper's healthy, like, he's going to be your top guy at linebacker. But I'm curious about a guy like Hayden Henry, maybe Grant Morgan, and Zach Zemos. And Zach Zemos was, you know, he maybe not the highest recruited guy, but it seemed like, you know, just looking at the roster, he made some pretty good weight gains to, you know, just kind of fill out his frame. And, you know, one of the first days that I was out at practice, I was relaying some notes to Matt, and I was like, Zach Zemos, in terms of his frame, he looks a lot like Hayden Henry. So you feel like you got two guys like him, and you feel pretty confident in Hayden Henry, I think, then you would probably be in good shape. But, I mean, as of right now, going into that second scrimmage, I think that's a big question mark. I think they got to get some things figured out there.
Yeah, somebody that's stood out to me that I've heard his name get called a few times is Jerry Jacobs, the Arkansas State transfer, playing in the cornerback position, the nickelback, wherever they need him. Mike Woods talked about going up against Jacobs in the early portions of fall camp and really battling it out over there. You know, Jacobs, we got to talk to him, and he was just saying that, you know, he's really enjoying his time at the SEC coming over from Arkansas State and wants to compete. And, you know, there's videos that the team has put out. You've seen Jacobs coming up with an interception. He's a guy that is kind of filling in that DB position that was maybe had some question marks back there. Yeah. And Jacobs really seems to be solidifying himself as a legit option.
He might be their best defensive back.
Yeah, he very well could be. Yeah. And I don't know that he's, you know, locked up a starting spot, but that he has made quite an impression, you know, on Mike Woods. On, I mean, even Felipe Frank said that, you know, Jerry Jacobs is, you know, kind of making him be more accurate with his balls when he's going to Jacob's side of the field. He's not missed a beat. And I know he's, you know, he got injured. He had a season ending injury in that season opener against Georgia last year. So I know he's got the Georgia game circled this year for sure.
All right, guys, second scrimmage coming out. What do you want to see from, I guess we can't see, I always want to use that word. What do you want to hear from the Arkansas coaches and the athletes that Arkansas is doing well in this next scrimmage? We'll start with you, Matt.
I want to hear who the offensive linemen are. I really do. I think that, you know, I'm really fascinated by that. I think it's because we know who the starters are going to be at a lot of other positions. They haven't named Felipe Franks a starter, but you read between the lines, you know, he's going to be their starting quarterback.
Yeah.
And you've got Boyd at running back. You've got receivers like Burks and Woods and, you know, probably a Hudson Henry at tight end. The offensive line is where the intrigue is with this team. And for a number of reasons, number one, because of how bad they've been the last few years along the offensive line. You know, some of the things they're trying to do this year, you look at the players are a lot bigger. You know, they got bigger bellies this year. They're not the flat belly offensive linemen like Chad Morris and Dustin Fry and Joe Craddock and that group wanted to have. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing them play against Georgia. And I think they'll get overwhelmed at times against Georgia, especially with as good of defensive front as Georgia's going to have this year. But I just want to see, you know, what kind of different look they have, what kind of different mentality they have. And I want to know who those guys are. And so that's what I'm most interested in finding out from this scrimmage is who's going to be the starting five up front. And again, we may not know the entire starting five, but I think we'll have a pretty good feel, you know, probably four of the five at least, you know, who are going to be the starters moving forward.
You think the biggest question mark's at right tackle right now? Or left guard?
Yeah, I mean, left guard or right tackle. It sounds like, you know, at center, it's probably going to be Stromberg. It's probably going to be Cunningham at left tackle. It's probably going to be Bo Limmer at right guard.
Ty Clary started to jump in there at
Clary. And I think Ty Clary may end up winning that position at left guard just because he's got, you know, experience as a starter. He started, what, 23 games as a center, and that doesn't even take into account. I think he started four or five or six games at the
two
different
guard
games. Yeah,
he's got experience at both guard spots.
Yeah, you know, he was a guard under Brett Bielema as a freshman in 2017, and then I think he moved over to center after Frank Ragnow got hurt that year. Yeah, so, you know, I think that there's – even though he's had his troubles with snapping the ball, I think we've all seen that, there's still some value in being a guy that has had 3 years of starting experience. And I think you're probably going to see him – probably may not be the right word, but I think there's probably a good chance that you'll see him win that job at left guard. And so, you know, then it comes down to right tackle. You know, is it Noah Gatlin? Is it Brady Latham? Is it
Dalton Wagner?
Dalton Wagner. Yeah. You know, I mean, that seems there's still a little bit of intrigue, I think, over there.
One of the things I want to see if Arkansas can take care of the ball. How's ball security? Does it improve from first scrimmage to the second scrimmage? Is Arkansas putting the ball on the ground? Is Felipe Franks or KJ Jefferson, are they throwing picks? You just want to see those guys have an accurate day throwing the ball, and then maybe, you know, receivers hold tight to that thing. And same with the running backs. And then another thing is just you want to hear something positive from the linebackers. Like, you just want to hear that somebody's kind of maybe rising to the occasion. And then lastly, who are your receivers after your top three? I think that's a big question mark because I feel really good about Arkansas's top three receiver. Treylon Burks, Mike Woods, Trey Knox, really solid. But who's after that? Is it Davion Warren, Tyson Morris? Tyson Morris has had a wrap on his hand for a while, so I think he may have broken a finger early in camp. Is it Coylon Jackson? Coylon Jackson's a guy that I've been waiting on to make a jump for a while. Haven't seen it. Maybe Kendall Catalan, TJ Hammonds. Like, I think the four, five, and six spots at receiver are pretty open. So, you know, maybe a pretty good second scrimmage could secure a spot.
It really goes back to building depth. And yeah, I think if you put the starting 11 on offense and the starting 11 on defense, Arkansas could maybe field a team that would be competitive if that's all it took.
Yeah.
But you know that's not all it takes. You got to be rotating guys in and out. And with this virus, guys, I mean, you know, you could have a situation. You remember the Arkansas-Missouri game last year where several of the players had the mumps. This is something that could be even worse than that, yeah. You know, potentially. And so, you know, there's just not a lot of depth on this team. And that's, I think, where Pittman and his staff really have their work cut out for them. And it's not going to be an easy fix. It's going to be a multi-year deal where, you know, they got to build some depth at linebacker, and they've got to make it to where if you lose your two of your top three receivers, that you're not panicking because, you know, maybe you have some other guys waiting in the wings who are at least capable or young and have shown some potential. And I just don't think you see that with this team right now. You see at most spots one SEC caliber player, some spots maybe two, but man, it's the depth is really thin on this team. And one thing we haven't mentioned either, I think is interesting that I would be interested to hear about from this uh, from the scrimmage this weekend is special teams, and especially the kicking game. You know, they lost Connor Limpert last year, and he may have been their best player. I mean, and I'm talking about maybe their most effective offensive player other than Rakeem Boyd, you know, just in terms of if you got within maybe the 35-yard line and in, you had a pretty good chance that he was going to make a field goal.
Right.
I remember I was sitting next to a scout from the Steelers and I think the Jets at the Colorado State game last year, and he came in and kicked, I think, a 54 or 55-yarder, and one of them made the comment, oh, there's no way he's going to make this. I'm like, you know, he's made it from 60, 62 in practice. I think he might. Boom, right down the middle. And the scout kind of looks at me. He's like, well, you knew what you were talking about. You know, is A.J. Reed going to be Connor Limpert? I don't know, but, you know, can he be effective as a place kicker? What are they going to do at punter? You know, punter's been a really sore spot for this team the last few years. I don't think I'm saying his last name right, but is it George Carrington?
Carrington, yeah.
From Michigan. You know, it sounds like he might be the front runner there. But we haven't heard a lot about special teams. You know, what are they going to do at kickoff return? What are they going to do at punt return? I know Traylon Burks has got some experience at punt return. But I think that, you know, it's interesting to me to know more about what's going on with special teams because we just haven't heard a whole lot about that.
And who's going to be the placeholder? Is it going to be Jack Lindsay again?
I think it's going to be Carrington.
Yeah, it probably is.
From what I talked to Jordan Silver during the
you asked that question? Actually, who's going to be the placeholder?
Hey, trust me. When you're talking to the long snapper, you ask a lot of questions because I don't understand long snapping very well. It's actually kind of a fascinating story. We're going to put that up on our site here in the next week or so. It ran in our Hogs Illustrated football preview. But it sounds like Scott Fountain, the new special teams coordinator, that he wants to have a punter be the holder. And so why that is, I don't know. I don't think it's going to be Jack Lindsay this year. I think it's going to be probably whoever is the starting punter, or maybe, you know, maybe a punter with the best hands.
Well, there goes the trick play. The trick play probability.
Maybe you should just make Traylon Burks the placeholder.
Just catch anything.
He's got really good hands. He can throw it. He can run it.
He's basically
Superman.
You know, something that's interesting about Jack Lindsay, I almost called him Link because Link's his little brother who I've been calling on the Fayetteville High School games. But something interesting about Jack is that they liked him as the holder for Limpert because of how good he was catching the ball with his right hand. With his left hand, because it's a left-footed kicker. So I liked how well he could catch it with his left hand and then place it into his right and put it down. And so now when you've got these right-footed kickers, you're going, whether it's Jack Lindsay or somebody else, you're catching it from the opposite side. And so I don't know if that plays into it at all or not. But it is a little bit different this year from a place-kicking perspective because you're not having a left-footed kicker now.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for joining us, Matt. We're going to go on to a commercial break, but don't go anywhere because when we come back, we're going to talk some basketball. Kelsey Plum added and to the Arkansas women's basketball staff, and there's also some information going on about when we actually might tip off the basketball season. So stay with us here on the Whole Hog Podcast.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Well, we're back here on the Whole Hog Podcast, and while football season is heating up and it's the main draw for this time of year, we're not going to forget about basketball. Scotty got the opportunity to talk to Arkansas head coach Eric Musselman last week, and he gleaned some good information from them, especially, you know, Scotty, that they are really utilizing that VR. I don't know which. It looks like a video game.
Yeah, I didn't ask him about that. That's I had like a list of questions. I made a list of questions, you know, the day before I got to talk to Eric, and that was like, I wanted to know a little bit more just about the simulated basketball study they're doing, but I didn't ask it for whatever reason. I just didn't ask. So
That comes straight from 2K.
I don't really have any answers for you that one.
That looks like it comes from 2K.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'm still very skeptical.
Maybe we'll get some insight on that at some point in the near future. But yeah, I just.
Well, Scotty did actually talk to Eric Musselman, yeah. And he did get some good information. But before we go into that, it is time for Scotty's favorite part of the podcast. Scotty, it's Random School of the Week time. I told you I wouldn't make this one too hard. I have the utmost confidence in you, which has worked out well the past few weeks.
Yeah, it makes one of us.
Okay, so we're going to the Mountain West Conference.
Okay.
That's not too obscure, right? Yeah. Okay, so we know the Mountain West. Probably the most famous alumni of the Mountain West is Boise State. I don't know if it's alumni, that would just be school. Is Boise State, which used to be the WAC. And then TCU used to be in the Mountain West until they went to the Big 12. Okay. So this school that is...
when you think Fort Worth, you think Mountain West.
I mean, there's mountains 100 and some odd miles west.
Sure.
Anyway, the closest mountains to Fort Worth might be the Ozark Mountains. They might be close.
This is not a geography pod. So...
You got me thinking, though. Okay. Reeling it back in here. School colors are red. They have a mascot that is the same mascot as an SEC school.
Oh, it's New Mexico State.
It is not.
I said New Mexico State because that's my dynasty on NCAA football 13 right now.
Okay.
And we just ran the table and we're ranked third in the country and we're playing in the Orange Bowl.
They didn't want you in the Natty?
No, they didn't.
They didn't want that smoke?
Not quite.
Okay. Famous and notable alumni? Guy Fieri?
Oh, man. I love Triple D so much. I'm probably not going to get this, though.
No.
It says Mountain West Conference School.
Team colors?
Are red.
Red. Same mascot as an SEC school.
Let's see. San Diego's... No, not San Diego State.
I can give you another hint. Their best sport... is basketball.
Oh, why am I drawing such a blank? I can't think of any schools.
They played Arkansas in basketball in 1990.
That's going to help.
And the best player for this team came up to Nolan and said, you need to go get yourself some grown men.
Oh, it was UNLV.
Yes! So they're the running rebels, so I kind of counted it as the same mascot as Ole Miss. Does that count?
Sure. I mean, it's your game, dog.
I can make up the rules?
Yeah.
Let's go. This is the first time anybody's ever told me that. I always have to follow the wife's rules. It's probably because I live with her, but that's okay. All right. It is indeed UNLV, the running rebels from Las Vegas. If I told you it was from Las Vegas, you would have gotten it right away. I didn't know that Guy Fieri... alumni from...
Yeah, I had no idea.
I didn't know you had to go to school to be a... What even is he? An entrepreneur?
He's the freaking GOAT, dude. I mean, anytime Triple D is on, your boy is watching.
Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives?
Yes. And I'm starting to get into guys' grocery games, but I'm not as into it. I love watching Triple D just for like the quirky little food trucks that he finds and just... the visuals on those on that food is just
enough to make you hungry.
Yeah, I can't look away.
Yeah,
He's the best. You need to follow him on Instagram.
That seems like a really bad idea for my health.
He's a great follow.
Seems like a really bad
idea. He's pretty funny.
Okay.
He's pretty funny. It's not so much like there are some food pics in there, but I mean his personality really really comes out even more so.
I went to his taco shop. Taco Dive Diner, whatever it is, in the Power and Light District in Kansas City when I went there last time. It was pretty good. I had loaded fries there, and it wasn't bad.
All right. One of my favorite things about going on like those carnival, I've been on a couple carnival cruises. There's like a guy's burger bar on those right across the deck from like this taco shop. So your boy's in heaven when
cruises are bad.
When I got the option between guy's burgers and some tacos, yeah.
Cruises are bad for your health. Unlimited food. There's a reason why food isn't you pay all up front. When you go to a restaurant, and you can eat all you want. I mean, there's a few places like that, but there's a reason why I don't go to those places, because your boy would be about 600 pounds. All right. Scotty, what did you glean from Eric Musselman about this 2020-2021 team?
Yeah, basically, you know, to this point in the preseason, they're taking care of business. Like, they're, you know, on the floor, Eric told me that, you know, they've installed a new transition offense, which I think he told Bob that like after the first week. So they're feeling a little bit more confident and comfortable in that. And they've also put in a third pick and roll coverage, which he believes is going to be pretty beneficial for Connor Vanover whenever he's in the lineup. But the thing that he's so proud of his guys right now, just in the way that they've handled everything with the virus. I talked to him last Thursday. So as of me talking to him last Thursday, they had not had one positive on the basketball team. And he said that, you know, he's super proud of them. And, you know, especially before the student body came back to campus for the start of classes, that his guys were doing a really good job of kind of like creating their own bubble and just kind of hanging out with each other. And in turn, not only is that keeping those guys healthy, but it's like building team camaraderie and their team chemistry. Eric told me one of the main things that I took away, other than no positives in terms of the virus right now, is he said that team chemistry is as good as it's been since he's been here as of right now. And so you just think about all the new faces that are on that roster. You got a lot of different personalities to consider and mesh. And right now it seems like it's going about as good as it could have, or as good as it could be. Excuse me.
I was interested about that Connor Vanover, because he talked about that at the very beginning of quarantine in March, about what they're going to do to
utilize Connor, their next big project.
And that'll be good, because it's not the same. I mean, it's not near the same. It's completely different as what you had with Adriel Bailey playing the five of, you know, Bailey can switch off onto a guard.
Yeah.
You feel like pretty well, especially if that guard was Jimmy Witt, because Witt would play the five starting out half the time anyway. And then Connor is just not the same. So that's interesting. It sounds like the NCAA is putting together a plan, though, to move forward with NCAA basketball, and it's maybe sooner than some people thought. It's not going to be right now. The unofficial word and what the NCAA is kind of pushing is it's not going to be a normal start to the season at the normal time. But November 25th, the day before Thanksgiving, that's not too late. That's still
just a couple weeks past the originally planned start date.
That's still a decent amount of time to have some non-conference games. Get in there, whoever you're going to play, I have no idea. But that's some time to get those games in, and that'd be right around the time of the Vegas tournament was scheduled.
If the season does start November 25th, which that is the date that the NCAA men's and women's oversight committees for college basketball, they proposed that start date for the 25th. So I think the NCAA Division I Council's next meeting is like September 16th. And so it's probably going to be a couple of weeks before we get anything concrete. But if that November 25th date is set, Arkansas, I think, you know, as of right now, based on what we know of their non-conference schedule, there's going to be at least three games that are kind of wiped off the books. And so you got like the Oral Roberts game, right, to kick off the season at home. And then those two games at the MGM Resort's main event out in Las Vegas, which kind of hurts my heart. But
Scotty wanted to go to Vegas.
Of course. Yeah. Cover Vegas Vans. Go out to Las Vegas. I haven't been to Las Vegas in like 3 years, and I miss it, man. I miss those long days in Las Vegas.
Why, Scotty?
Why?
Why do you miss Vegas?
Because it's freaking Vegas, dude. You should go. I mean, you should talk to Matt about going out there. Take the camera. Like, you can get some awesome footage, some exclusive footage, and you can come out there and we'll just go around. We'll travel around Vegas.
All right, sounds good.
We'll you see. Can we, get... we can try it all, so you can find out what you like and don't like.
I don't know if I like that or not. I don't have the wording on that. Hey, you can get cheap flights from XNA to Vegas.
Yeah,
I know multiple people that are in college that
take you some really good spots to eat too. You can trust me on that.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, well, then we
I'll
need
take
them...
you to the place where I met Jose Canseco.
If Jose Canseco yeah. can eat there, then
that's where Jose Canseco had his birthday dinner. So,
I mean,
yeah, food's awesome.
Well, another basketball news on the women's side. Neighbors hired. I mean, this is just unique all the way around, and this is going to be unique to women's basketball. But Neighbors hired a former player that was an overall number one pick in the 2017 NBA draft, WNBA draft. Is still playing, but she's also going to be a graduate assistant, and that's Kelsey Plum from Washington. All around, just a unique situation, and it's already, I mean, on day one, he was one day in it, 24 hours when we got to talk to him, and he said it's already paying off to have her on staff.
Yeah. I mean, you were on that Zoom call. Come on, what were your takeaways from the hire?
She can recruit. Not...
She can't like initiate.
Yes. Yeah, so she can't initiate conversation. Yeah. But if somebody contacts her, if they're having coaches on a call with a recruit, she can join that call. If somebody wants to go to a WNBA game and take a picture with her, sign an autograph of her when she's with the Las Vegas Aces, like she can do all that.
Put yourself in the position of like a prospective, like a recruit who Arkansas is already going after you. So you're already like, man, like this kind of up and coming women's program in the SEC's kind of interested in me. And then, oh, by the way, here's the all time leading scorer in women's college basketball history and the number one pick in the draft, Kelsey Plum. She wants to talk to you.
Yeah.
That would blow my mind if I'm on the other end of the line.
Neighbors put out a video to, I guess, tease his hiring of her with her coaching him on the I really encourage you to go
find whiteboard.
Find Neighbors' Twitter, because Neighbors has the whiteboard and Plum has the pen, and Plum is drawing on the whiteboard while Neighbors is sitting there nodding his head, which is hilarious.
Right, yeah, that was a good clip.
But he said that he posted that and he had girls commenting on the comments that are like, oh wow, I hope Arkansas calls me now. And he goes, and I didn't have them on the call list, and so I needed to call them, so I made sure to add them to the call list and called them, because they announced it on September 1st, which they didn't plan, is what Neighbors said, but they can initiate recruiting conversations then on September 1st. And so it worked out really well to create a lot of buzz. I never even thought that that was really like something that somebody would think about.
Yeah.
Of playing, but the WNBA season is during the summer and the college season is during the winter.
Mm-hmm.
So during your off season, why can't you be a coach and go to school? She's getting her degree online. She's going to be a grad assistant. And Neighbors made it very clear that she is going to get healed first. She tore a tendon in her Achilles. Ruptured is the word that she used. So she's getting rehabbed on that right now. She's doing that in Vegas. She's going to be traveling from Vegas to Arkansas a lot. And Neighbors made it clear that she may not be on the bench for every single game. She may not be on the bench for half the games. He doesn't know. But she's going to be in their meetings before the game and their meetings after the game and giving input if she's not there on the bench. And then he also said if she is on the bench, it's going to be probably not at the end of the bench. He's going to have a hard time keeping her away from him and coaching. It's super interesting.
Yeah, now Neighbors has two former players on his staff. Chantel is a horse. She got hired, I think, last July. Mm-hmm. Like I wrote that story about her being hired. He's now got like one of the more unique coaching staffs probably in the country. I mean, just nobody else that I mean, obviously I don't have just a ton of knowledge on women's college basketball staffs, but I mean, Todd Schaefer has been with Neighbors since Washington. Mm-hmm. So that's another guy with those yesteryear, those Washington teams. And then Ozahor's, she's one of the more unique players that women's college basketball has ever seen too, with that flat-footed left-handed jumper.
And then rebounding. She's not very tall, but she could rebound like nobody's business.
Yeah, no kidding. She's been a nice addition to that staff too. And Kelsey Plum's gonna, I mean, that I was messaging back and forth with a team spokesperson the other day, just trying to get some more information after Neighbor sent that tweet out. And I was just like, that's a pretty fun hire. And then the spokesperson was like, yeah, it's pretty unbelievable. I mean, it is. That kind of came out of left field, but that's a big hire.
Just think about the recruiting pitch. And she said on the Zoom call that this was his best recruiting pitch ever, even better than the one that she had at Wisconsin, Washington. Mm-hmm. But just think about, you are playing at the highest level of women's basketball that there is. The highest level. She's also going to be on the Olympic team, by the way, in case you're wondering, the 3-on-3 Olympic team. You're playing at that highest level. And you decide, yeah, I want to take on and get my master's. And besides just getting my master's, I also want to be a coach. Not just a grad assistant, but still, I want to be a coach for an SEC Division I program. One of the better conferences in women's basketball. I'm not well-versed enough. I should be, but I'm not well-versed enough to say it's the best. But it's not bad.
Yeah.
Holy smokes. That's insane. And I think it's a matter of a year or two before Arkansas is a top four program in the SEC, women's basketball. Right? No joke, competing day in and day out with Neighbors at the helm as a top four. You've got your South Carolinas, Mississippi State was up there, but they lost their coach, was Vic Schaefer. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? So they lost Vic Schaefer.
Texas A&M
with Gary Blair is always going to be up there.
Figure Tennessee's not going to stay down too long.
Tennessee.
Kentucky's been ranked. I mean, it's a tough league.
But, yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know, you have – I don't think Florida but women's basketball is that great.
Safe to say Arkansas is establishing itself as a team to definitely keep an eye on. I don't think – nobody's taking them lightly anymore. I mean, they're way past that.
Yeah.
Past that point.
They're in the realm of, it's not whether or not they're going to make the NCAA tournament every single year. It's what seed are they going to be in the NCAA tournament?
Yeah.
And to take that program in 3 years from can we win a game in the SEC to what seed are we going to be in the NCAA tournament? Hats off. That's all I can say. Hats off. And then you need to go watch Mike Neighbors and his team play sometime if you can. I don't know if they're going to let us in the stadium this year. But if you can, it's a fun brand of basketball.
Mm-hmm.
He just lets them go. Run up and down the court as much as you want.
I love the trust that he instills in his players. I think that goes a long way in just those kids feeling free enough and just able to go do their thing.
All right, Scotty, anything else to add on the Whole Hog podcast?
Yeah, you know, I was talking to Eric Musselman. He was talking about the third pick and roll coverage that he thinks is going to benefit Connor Vanover. So last year, Arkansas had a hard show / trap pick and roll coverage, and then they had like just your basic switch. Those are the only two pick and roll coverages they had last year. So this third one is more unique to Connor Vanover. That third coverage, Eric was calling it like a tracker / drop coverage, which is basically what the Milwaukee Bucks do when either Robin or Brooke Lopez is on the floor. Like it's specific to 7-footers. Like you got to, when you're trying to, I guess, attack pick and rolls defensively with a 7-footer on the floor. So basically what that looks like is the defensive big and the coverage kind of sags into the lane, and basically his primary objective is to kind of dissuade the ball handler from getting a clean look at the rim. And so Eric thinks that's going to really benefit Connor. We'll see how that goes. I mean, it's, you got to see it against another team before you can, you know, truly say that it's going to pan out. But they've definitely done their homework, and that project that they said that they were setting out to to get done earlier in the year. It seems like they've got good results from it. If you just kind of want some other updates on, you know, it's kind of how workouts are going. I think I asked Eric about every guy on the roster except for like the walk-ons and maybe, no, I did ask about Bebe. Yeah, because he's coming back. He's battling back from a ACL injury. But yeah, I posted a few notes on our message board that I didn't necessarily get into the story, but
That's why you should become a wholehogsports.com subscriber to get that information on the message board.
Yeah, it was good catching up with him. We hadn't heard really just a whole lot since maybe after the first week of workouts ended. So
yeah. All right, Scotty, good stuff. Make sure to check out the description. Bunch of stories in there about what we talked about, more in-depth knowledge there. Maybe give you just a little bit of context about what we've been talking about as well. So make sure to click the link in the description, the links in the description. For Matt Jones and Scotty Bordelon and our entire Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette team and Whole Hog Sports team, and Hogs Illustrated team, because we've got a lot of people working on this website.
No kidding.
That's why you should subscribe to wholehogsports.com, the largest group of journalists covering the Razorbacks, all in one spot on wholehogsports.com. Well, for all of those guys, I am Seth Campbell saying so long, mask up, and we will see you back here next week.